Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today's episode marks the first part of our end-of-the-year wrap-up, featuring interviews from some of California's top brands during Hall of Flowers, NorCal, and SoCal events. First up is Chris Lane, CMO of San Jose-based Airfield Supply Co. We sat down with Chris to talk about everything from marketing in the world of cannabis to the future of the Airfield brand. All this and more on this episode of Conversations in Cannabis.
Almost the microbrew kind of aspect, because you still have a lot of
parallels there.
Yeah,
like especially with consolidation and then sort of like the re-expansion of markets and then...
Exactly. But it's interesting to me, the expediency of, say, what's the best way to say this? The expediency of a legacy market being transitioned into a legal market.
Yeah.
And then the instance of that, say, that Amsterdam or that Mylar sandwich bag being transitioned to an actual CPG brand.
Yep.
Like the speed that happened.
Yeah, it happened pretty quick. It was like you could feel the industry, I think, you know, kind of building steam. And right around 2019, you know, into 2019 and 2020, like when we were starting to do things, you're starting to hear the conversations popping up. And then I think once they pop up, it's also because it's such a hyper-aggressive industry. Like it's so competitive, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's this massive... forgive the pun, but like greenfield, obviously, that like, you know, there's all these people racing in all these different ways. You get a really aggressive market. So like in some industries where people are maybe like, no, we're going to hold back and do this because we're not totally convinced. In this, it's like when one person jumps and they gain success from the jump that they made, everyone else is like, okay, we'll go there. And then they go there. And then they go there. So they're like zigzagging their way up, which so it creates these like quick salmon ladders. But at the same time, you know, it's also like, I mean, it's crazy. If you compare it to the alcohol industry, which is what, you know, 4,000 plus years old, right? That has developed all of these different markets and all these different things. You know, the retail industry has to be everything from a liquor store to a high-end cocktail lounge.
Right.
And you have to serve everything. Like, there's no other industry on earth that you have to serve such a wide variety of people right now. And I think you're starting, so you were having to jump in all these different directions you needed to have. You're having to serve every kind of consumer at a wide variety of product categories, at a wide variety of price points, all through one central location. So like you're finding people that are having to become like jack of all trades. And now I was just having this discussion with somebody who runs another large brand about, you know, are we going to see specialization or are we going to continue to see sort of this wide scaling thing? And I think we'll start to see, well, it'll be interesting, but I think we're starting to see smart players understanding what they do best and focusing in more on those things and knowing that there's ecosystems being developed. I think before there was no ecosystem. So if you wanted to be something, you had to figure out how to be X, Y, and Z. That's why there's so many retail companies that have a software that they started because they had to go build something. They didn't have it, right?
Exactly. You know,
So like it's fascinating, but I think we'll now start to see, hopefully we'll start to see those networks benefiting people rather than sort of competing against everyone at the same team all the time in every different way.
Well, and it's interesting when you're looking at, again, and I want to take it back to the 215 market real quick, because when you're looking at the 215 market, you do see all of these different brands that did literally no insight into marketing behind what the strains that they carried was. And that term, meaning your marketing is, oh, you're the guy on the block that has Skywalker, right?
Exactly.
And now you have, oh, you're the guy on the block that has this house brand and that house brand, plus you have Wonder Brett, plus you have this, plus you have that, and I don't feel like I'm a prisoner walking into your store.
Exactly, the walled garden.
Yeah.
It's so, like AOL is finally gone.
Oh, yeah. AOL, Netscape. Like now we're actually into, you know, if you want to call it a cannabis 2.0, where there's actually CPG proliferation. Now, being a company like Airfield that has both, you know, your house brand and which, you know, you're now launching as
aviation
from Jet Fuel, and aviation keeping with your whole motif of being near the airfield and being airplane centric, are you surprised that more brands haven't taken the leap to that type of approach sooner?
You mean like sort of building a house of brands kind of thing?
Not just building a house of brands, but building almost a house of brands, building a story around your idea of what you want to convey to your consumer. You guys are a landing strip airfield where you can come get your boarding pass, then view and pick out your products for your flight. You know what I mean? Like, it's such an interesting way to build a story around a brand. And I feel like a lot of legacy brands haven't taken that leap. Now, are you surprised that that hasn't happened? Or are you expecting that to happen in the future?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we developed our airfield, and our CEO, Mark Matlich, is the mastermind behind all this. I mean, I was involved in the project, obviously, but, like, you know, all of the credit to his love and passion of building this company over 12 years. But, like, the concept originally of when it was coming, you know, really was all built around the mission. And I think this is kind of what you're getting at is, you know, mission-driven marketing versus product marketing. You know, I come from the brand side of the world. I was global head of brand at a company called Fiverr, IPO'd in 2019. You know, I worked for a lot of really fascinating people in creative industries and agencies, you know, whether it's like Adobe, Google, New York Times, Sony, or obviously the consulting on Airfield for a long time now, over 7 years. But, you know, in the brand world, you can't not build a brand that way. Like, when you develop a brand, you start at the core. Like, I'm a massive believer in Simon Sinek, the golden circle theory of, you know, of starting with why, not with what. And with Airfield, that was always the core, is what is our why? Why do we exist? You know, and when we settled in on this mission and this why belief around the idea of making the most out of life's journey every day, that's when the pieces start to fall into place. So it's not that we're necessarily sort of came up with this thing and then figured out how we tie all these little pieces together. It's more about developing this holistic brand at the why, right? Our mission every single day. How do we do that? We believe in curation and customer service and experience. An experience in life, right? Not just in shopping, but in what you're doing, making the most out of every day. And then the what, right, is developing a world-class cannabis retailer and flower company out of that. That's just the output of it. So when you operate at that brand level, then you start to think about all these different articulations of the brand, it naturally manifests itself in different things, like a boarding pass, or like, yeah, the airstrip, right? I mean, but that whole concept of Airfield and flight and all this, you know, came out of that idea of taking off. And just that feeling when you take off at the beginning of a trip, maybe you don't know where you're going, you don't know what's going to happen to your trip, you don't know, but you're excited, that feeling of excitement. We wanted everyone, every single time that they experience Airfield, to have a similar feeling that they're about to take off, because that's obviously where cannabis goes with everything. And so we're just, you know, geez, 7 almost years ago now, just started building that narrative. And then when we start to think about all the different experiences, whether that's our retail brand Airfield or whether that's our product company Aviation, we start to think about those opportunities. That's why Aviation, you know, the concept of that brand is built around these journeys you go on. We say that, you know, every strain has a story, and you're going to have a story with that strain. So, you know, we developed this incredible line art that has all these details about stories of the strains and the flavors and some of the possible experiences you could have while on it, and tie that theme into the idea of travel and exploration, you know, personal and communal. So you just start to articulate it out and you build it. But because it's so natural and because it's always come from the core, you're just continuing to build these new, okay, what would we do if we were in this position? Will we do it like this? That's where we go, you know?
Well, and when you're looking at, say, your house brands, and you're taking a look at, you know, the renaming, because there's not a lot of companies that do renaming. I mean, the one that I remember off the right off the top of my head that I believe was the first one in cannabis that did a huge major rename
Dosist.
And I mean, what was it before HBMT? Humboldt.
No, it was Humboldt. Yeah, Humboldt. Yeah.
So when you have, you know, this large scale rebrand opportunity, was it partially also because of this big shift from macro to micro? You know, when people are microdosing, or, you know, jet fuel versus, say, wanting a more encompassing house brand versus just, hey, we only have gas.
Right. Yeah, it was a couple of things. And I will say, too, that probably less of a rebrand, really, and more of sort of like an expansion of the concept. Like it's a new thing we're bringing. So, you know, jet fuel has been our house brand for, you know, several years. And as we kind of step back and looked at where we wanted to go, we did want to make sure that we built a brand that felt, you know, as perfectly aligned to Airfield as we possibly could, but also one that had a lot of depth in the story. So I think there was an understanding of both our opportunity from a creative perspective. There was an understanding of where the market was going. There was a hope that we could help drive that market even further forward. And then also, you know, we have very much beliefs when it comes to the product side of things, that, you know, terpenes trump percentages. And sure. So like we want to build a company that's not just about what percentage it is, but about the flavors and the experience and all that, which ties, you know, very tightly into the aviation world. And so for us, we found that we could articulate that really well in aviation. So it was a lot of things kind of coming together at once and saying, okay, let's take this leap. Also sustainability. You know, we have a huge focus on sustainability internally, just a mantra as the company from our CEO, Mark, down to everyone. You know, we try to take practices. We know, you know, as an operator, it sees 1,000, 2,000 people a day. You know, each one of those goods can have 4 or 5 pieces of disposable plastic on it, single-use plastic. And, you know, if we've got those kind of numbers a day and we know how many items are in a basket, you multiply that by a day, by a year, we're like, yeah, we need to like care about this. This is really important. We don't have a choice.
Oh yeah.
And so that got driven. And then when you think about the product company, we're like, okay, well, what do we put our eighth in? Do we put it in glass? That's really heavy to transport, you know, and takes a lot of carbon footprint to develop and do all these things. Or do we put it in recyclable tin? That's lighter. That's fully recyclable, that we can capture the flavor perfectly because we nitrogen dose it and seal it in there and you can still see the buds, you know? So a lot of those decisions, they just come out of the values. It drives from the values.
Well, and I want to take it a step back because you mentioned something that's very interesting, and that's the consumer mindset as far as, you know, THC percentages aren't the end all be all. And you're seeing a consumer mindset shift, I believe, as far as, hey, alternative cannabinoids are important. The totality of the terpene profile is important. Are you hopeful that that gets more and more in depth? And do you think that the kickoff for that was CBD?
Yeah, I mean, I think the sort of rise of CBD certainly started just a different kind of conversation. You know, with us, we even to the point of like the indica sativa hybrid piece of the story, like we don't print on our cans or on our products like this is a sativa, this is a indica. Like our jack is our jack, and the flavor is what's there, and the experience is what potentially drives you to go for it. Like, and we're famous for that jack. We've been growing it for over 10 years. You know, it's our showpiece product. We're not going to try to just be like, it's a sativa and it's 27% and whatever. Because I don't think, like, nobody shops for alcohol and goes in and says, hey, can I get the 99% alcohol? Like,
Everclear would be
yeah, exactly. And it is certainly not, because that's not what people want. They want flavor and experience, and they want that entourage effect that comes from the cannabinoids and comes from the terps and comes from all these things. And so I think the CBD thing definitely helped make that conversation better. I also think just general market maturation. And I know you said earlier, you know, maybe we're in cannabis 2.0. I still really think we're
1.5.
The industry is in 3.0.
Okay.
The consumer is like still beta testing. Like, if we're like going down the tech,
that's true,
parallel, because they're just, we're not hitting the potential addressable markets. You know, the Chardonnay moms, the opioid people, the, you know, people trying to switch off of alcohol, people that traditionally were not cannabis consumers, they're coming online now. They are, but it's every day we see it. You know, we see 100 to 400 new customers every day at Airfield. And some of those people have had experience with cannabis, but more and more, they maybe haven't. But they're tired of Ambien, and they're not sleeping well at night. Or they're just tired of a hangover. Or they're tired of, you know, maybe they're tired of something. Maybe they want to try something new. And so we're starting to see with those people, you know, they're not locked into the old sativa, kind buds, 32% is the only thing you need, gas, you know?
Well, I mean,
which is exciting.
The fastest growing demographic is 55 plus yeah. cannabis. And so when you're seeing these people try, I mean, obviously they don't want to get ripped out of their minds.
Right.
I mean, they want to try to find an ailment. Like you said, either they don't want to get hungover,
or they want to benefit.
They just want to rest.
Yeah, they just want to relax.
Yeah.
Had a long day at work. Everyone has been through a hell of an 18 months. Like, people are looking for ways to find it. You know, while you're here, like the bicycle industry exploded in COVID, right? Because everyone was spending time outside. I mean, similar to the cannabis industry, right? You're spending outside time and inside time. And I think finding ways to maximize your experiences has really kind of come back to the forefront of the world, which is exciting.
Well, as a retailer who had to go through COVID, I mean, California is not the not the easiest place to operate in the best of times. And now you're dealing with a global pandemic. Now, were you surprised that cannabis was deemed essential?
No, I don't think surprised. I mean, we come from the medical world. We came out of all of that. And I think for us, I mean, we were thankful, let's say, first of all, and most importantly. But I hear every single day, and obviously we would never make any medical claims about anything, but I hear stories, whether it's from our frontline bud tenders or from other executives in the industry that we're talking with, about the power of cannabis and helping someone, whether it's just relax a little bit more or sleep a little bit better or just have a little more confidence in a social setting or anything. So, you know, I think from an essential perspective, you know, everyone can slice and dice it however they want, but I have seen the essential power of cannabis on thousands of faces every single day at Airfield who are so thankful. We were talking about the power of access, right, originally, and that people still are living this access-driven world, not an experience-driven world yet, but, you know, access was real important to a lot of people.
And
it still is.
I was going to say access is still hard to come by here in California. You know, you have a lot of unincorporated cities or opt-out cities that don't want to be a part of the industry necessarily. I mean, there's been workarounds as far as delivery is concerned. Are you hopeful that that gets kind of fixed in the long term in the Californian cannabis and other industries? I mean, it's happening all over the country where people start to realize, like, hey, cannabis isn't something to be feared. It's something to be kind of be embraced.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, we are hopeful that anybody who could potentially benefit from it has an ability to safely access it. I think the safe access part is another huge piece of that. And so for us, that is, yeah, it's a fundamental piece of what we're wanting to focus on. We want to focus on education and people understanding the value of these products for whatever you're looking for, psychoactive, non-psychoactive, you know, you name it, there's opportunity there. I think for us, the all boats float kind of situation is where we really are wanting things to head. And obviously in leading that charge, as one of the leading retailers in the state, you know, we want to make sure that we offer as much as we can to as many people as we possibly can. But also not compromise on experience or trust and make sure that education is at the core. I think there's a lot of discussions out there in the world right now around like pricing models. And, you know, we are very adamant about, obviously we're lucky that we have really strong buying power with our volume, but you know, we want to make sure that we can offer as good a price as possible, but we're also not just giving, you know, pointless shifting of dollars left and right from one brand to another week by week to try to keep people interested. We want to make sure we can provide value to customers, whether it's education, whether it's, you know, loyalty programs, whether it's any of these kind of things. I think the focus should be on a much higher order than just daily sales, right? It's about yearly progress as an industry.
And you're looking at the progress of California's industry, the most recent progress being the merging of the three agencies into the DCC. Have you seen that as a positive move for regulation in California? And as kind of a forward to that, are you hopeful for regulatory change, especially in relation to taxation, now that the DCC can be streamlined?
Yeah, I mean, frankly, I'm probably the wrong person to ask about the DCC stuff a little bit, but I think we're always hopeful that with proactive, positive conversations, lots of transparency and lots of people doing things for the right reasons, that we'll continue to see progress there. I think, you know, we have great relationships with people, whether it's at the state level, the local level. At our 10th anniversary, in fact, we had the State Assembly of California was there presenting us with a commendation for our work in the city of San Jose. We had the city of San Jose there as well doing it. I mean, our opinion on those things is that we want to be a positive and proactive actor in helping things move and continue to progress in the right way.
I'll move it more towards your wheelhouse in social media.
Yeah.
And in marketing in general, yeah. In cannabis, there's a lot of restriction. There's no industry, even alcohol, that's as regulated as cannabis when it comes to marketing. Reaching consumers in a digital age for a brand, how do you do it around social marketing if you can't do actual social marketing?
You can't actually do it. I mean, obviously organic content becomes king at that point. You know, what you lose in, I always kind of say, what you lose in sort of predictability, you gain in the opportunity for creativity sometimes. It's not to say I wouldn't love to be able to run paid campaigns on Instagram and YouTube and just make life a lot easier. But, but you know, I think that is one of the interesting things to your point earlier, too, about like cannabis brands really sort of like skyrocketing. I think a lot of that is because they know organic content is so important. When you don't have the ability to just pay and, you know, use acquisition and, you know, in traditional consumer companies, tech companies, right? I mean, all 80% of my budget would be on acquisition and retention marketing, or 60, because I'm a brand guy, so 40% has got to go to brand. But, but it forces you to find creative ways to engage people. You know, that the age old sort of theory in marketing that successful marketing is about reach and frequency. So creating the right sort of reach channels to get them there. But you have to do a lot of polling. You pull people in and you get them excited. You have to give them good experiences. And you have to make sure that at every single touch point, you're giving them some value. Because that is the other big challenge, is when you can't go reach everyone, you have to make sure that that hit, that frequency hit, is super high value. Or else you're, why are you doing it? Why are you wasting the opportunity? So,
well, and the cost per acquisition for, you know, a general cannabis consumer can't be easy to actually quantify, yes, considering the fact that marketing is so hard in cannabis. And I have to imagine that the lifetime value of your consumer almost becomes more important at that point.
Absolutely. It is. I mean, so CPA is a really interesting thing because, yeah, you can, if you're not running a bunch of paid channels, it's pretty hard. I mean, you can take marketing spend and divide it by a number of new customers. And like, sure, you come up with a CPA. That is a number that exists in the world that is made using data. But, you know, I think lifetime value is certainly huge. Like, you know, we can calculate that out all day. But that's where retention marketing is so fundamental in cannabis. I mean, it's just, it could not be said. I mean, one of the first things I did when I came in as CMO was, you know, we took a look at the data. We said, wow, we have this like massive opportunity with data. But there was this, you know, really kind of black box sitting around the experience that happens. And so, you know, even as a brand guy, the first thing we did was bring in Salesforce to build out a tech stack for CRM so that we can have marketing automation and journeys and driving people along, because to your point, you know, it's a lot more expensive to acquire a customer than to keep them. So let's keep them and let's move them on paths that, you know, that we know from other customers and cohorts are where people like to go. And so if we can just effectively nudge them along, providing value every step of the way, well, then we can make sure that we're moving people in directions. And not everybody needs to be the highest spending, highest frequency customer. That's great. Don't get me wrong. But you want to have a lot of different types of people because you want to have a lot of different types of opportunities. So, you know, that it creates more of a robust world of experiences. And then naturally, you've got a lot of content that can speak to a lot of different things. And therefore, that brings it back to the creativity and the content and everything there.
Well, and one part of retention is making sure that the products on your shelves are actually what your customer wants at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And with so many brands here in California, I mean, if you were in a new market, maybe you've got 10, 12 brands across the entire state, a little bit easier to decide which you want to actually house.
But also harder to differentiate, which is interesting.
That is true.
It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. But here in California, you have a literal tidal wave of brands that are and white labels that are coming up every single day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How do you decide what you actually want your consumer to end up at the end of the day consuming?
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously a gigantic process that goes into this. I mean, we have an incredible procurement team led by Hudson Moores, our chief sales officer, who is there, you know, constantly evaluating the portfolio, right? I mean, that is the inevitability. And sometimes that's both us looking at what we bring on and making sure that it lines up to consumers, but also just directly asking consumers what they want and figuring out how it lines up. So, you know, it's a never ending dance. It's like one of those, it's like the painting the Golden Gate Bridge sort of joke, right? That as soon as you get to the end of it, you start painting again. As soon as you perfected the portfolio, you gotta, you know, you're already looking at something else and saying, too much, not enough, too much, not enough. Do we have the right things? Are people looking at it? And we have this conversation a lot of, you have to listen to the market, right? And see, is there something in the market that we're not missing? But also you have to look at the opportunity and say, is there something we need to be pushing into the market where we can gain from it as well? And so, you know, it's a never ending thing. I mean, that's why our house brand Aviation is such a core focus for us, in that it really allows us to, you know, use 12 years of our own market research to build a product SKU and a product portfolio that we know our customers want. Like, it's not only is it, we know we want it, but like, they've already been buying it. They've been asking for these things and those things and these things and those things. So when we're building this, we're building truly the market demand portfolio. So it's helpful. It's nice. You know, when you have, you know, several, you know, 30,000, 50,000 data points a month on what people like, it's makes it a little more confident to find the line of best fit.
Well, and from, you know, from, to your point, data is king. At the end of the day, when you're looking at what the market is telling you and you're looking at what, you know, your software is telling you and what people are actually purchasing and you're looking at directed purchasing patterns, I mean, you're going to find out what people want, but you're not necessarily going to know for new brands entering the market, right? Yeah. And so when you're talking to some of these people, say here at House of Flowers, or Hall of Flowers, apologies. When you're here at Hall of Flowers and you're seeing, you know, brands launch, obviously you're launching your own house brand or relaunching, rebooting, however you want to describe it.
Expanding
out the house brand. All of the things.
Yeah,
but
all the verbs.
When you're looking at that and you want to reach, say, a new retailer and you say, hey, I want aviation to be in your store. How do you convey your plant's story or your strain story or your product story to them in order to make sure that they understand what your product is all about before they even decide if they want to smoke?
Yeah, I mean, that again goes back to our belief in mission-driven marketing, and that aviation was built with a series of values, which are literally listed directly on all of the products, or our values, which is craft-grown indoor, flavor-obsessed, sustainably packaged, right? For us, that's where we go. That's what we wear, literally wear on our sleeve. We put it on the sleeves that the weed goes in. So, you know, it starts from there, and it starts, obviously, we've got a great sales team that works on the B2B side, but you know, it starts with those messages because that's what matters to us. We want to have perfected genetics. You know, we're not like crazy strain hunters going after the latest and greatest that's going to be there for a week and gone after that. We've spent a lot of time. Some of our genetics we've been growing for over 10 years to perfect. So for us, there's a focus on perfecting heirloom genetics, quality, consistency. We want to make sure that every time you get an eighth of Jack, that it feels just like that last eighth you experienced. Because there's a lot of up and downs on those kind of things.
Well, and I'm very curious about that too, because, you know, the industry right now is a little bit obsessed with exotics, and I feel like there's starting to be a pullback back to legacy strains, and people trying to find, you know, those strains that they kind of grew up with, and they're finding a lot of them are gone, you know, like the original Bubbas. Right. You know, how do you find that now? When you're trying to, say, secure your lineage for 20, 30 years from now, how do you determine not just what strains that you want to go ahead and continue forward with, but how do you make sure that those strains are preserved for the future?
Yeah, I mean, our cultivation team is incredible. Our chief cultivation officer, his name's Noah Sweeters, and Jason Fish, who's our flowering manager, cultivation manager. But they go to painstaking efforts to ensure that anything we would put into production runs, like we've gotten the stability out of it before we'd ever be putting it into market. Right. So we're growing that thing again and again and again. So, like, you know, we're constantly in our indoor grow, obviously rotating, and we've got this really beautiful balance of these heirloom genetics that we've been growing for a long time, and we've got great stability in it and all that, mixed with, you know, some of the new limited drops, things that, you know, we're hearing that people enjoy in the market and that we find really exciting, but the ones that we know are consistent. So for us, you know, in our cultivation team, this is obviously better to speak on this, but like, it's not like when you get an aviation flower, it's the first time it's ever been grown by us. It's probably the third, maybe the fifth, sixth time. You know, we're talking months and months of research to ensure stability. We're not just popping seeds and going, you know, and hitting the party. And that's, I think, a huge piece of it is you just need to put the work in to ensure you get the quality.
Well, and you guys have put the work in over continued years now in the industry. You spoke on a panel earlier today. You know, first off, it's great to be back in person.
Indeed.
Can you kind of tell us a little bit about what the panel kind of was about and kind of what was the one over-encompassing vision from that panel? What's the one key takeaway?
Yeah, so the panel was all on sort of expanding retail footprint or you know, sort of expanding retail brand strategy, if you will, or business strategy. You know, and I think one of the biggest takeaways Well, it's interesting. Obviously, there was myself, and there was the CEO from Catalyst.
It was interesting suing the state of California.
But you know, they have 6 licenses. I think they said they're aiming towards 20. You know, they're very much a license and expand kind of brand. And we obviously have sticked with one location and really focused on dialing in everything, right? When we do e-commerce, we want the best e-commerce. So we built an e-commerce platform on Adobe Magento that took almost a year to launch. You know, when we do delivery, we deliver in Teslas because, one, it fits our business model. It's a super efficient vehicle. But two, it also fits our sustainability strategy. You know, like for us, constantly optimizing and ensuring that when we expand in the best possible way and we make it better and better and better. And I think that, you know, one of the big takeaways is that there are a lot of ways to do it right. You can be really focused on growth and location, location, locations, you know, and just popping them up. You could be really focused on optimization and expansion of your opportunity for, you know, for us, same thing with, that's another reason with aviation, right? It gives us another topic of conversation for the consumer base to bring them in. But I think, you know, the big takeaway is that there's a lot of different ways to do it, but the core that always seems to be at the bottom of it is understanding why you're building your business, understanding the true need that the consumer has in the market. I think, you know, that's one place where, you know, we certainly line up on that is that, you know, we're doing this to serve people. That's the goal. And so how you articulate that can come across in a lot of ways, but you have to be true to the mission. You have to be true to your values, and you have to be authentic to what's needed out there and what you can provide in order to really be able to expand.
Is there any possible future expansion for you guys beyond San Jose?
Yeah, you know, we're always interested in interesting opportunities. You know, we've spent a lot of time really working to perfect this as much as possible and find everywhere we can. And we're always looking at what we can do to bring that farther. Certainly. Yeah.
Any market in particular that's more interesting than others?
I don't know if anyone's more. I mean, you know, every market is interesting for different reasons. I think we love being in Silicon Valley. We love being in the Bay Area. I think it's obviously our home. It's where the brand, you know, began, where the business has grown, where all those kind of things. But there's so much uniqueness to each one. There's so many different kinds of markets in California and obviously beyond that. You know, it's really about where is the opportunity to, I think, serve best. Where can you create a lot of value, engage in communities? I mean, I think one of the beautiful sort of pseudo unintended pieces of cannabis being such a legacy and such a sort of, you know, naturalistic industry at the beginning is this understanding of the power of community engagement. I think that's something that is fantastically at the core of so many companies. And so I think feeling the ability to engage and better a community, I think is really exciting. I mean, we just hosted or the title sponsor for the first public concert in San Jose in almost 2 years called Music in the Park. And like, it's like self-serving to say, but I can't tell you how many people came up to us and were just like, hey, listen, like, clearly you sponsored this thing. I don't really know exactly what that means, but like, thanks. Like, it's been a really long couple of years. It's really nice to come to a concert. And like, just, that feels good. That's nice to be a part of a company in an industry that wants to make the world better around it.
And believes in the industry because it grew up in the industry.
Yeah,
I mean, if you've been around since again the 2015 era, then you kind of understand exactly what the future is going to look like because you've seen what the past is, and you truly understand what the past is versus, say, you know, money players that are just coming into the space.
Yeah.
When you're looking at the next quarter, is obviously you're releasing the expansion of your brand from jet fuel to aviation here at Hall of Flowers. What's Q4 look like for you guys? Or is it just focusing on getting this new rebrand or expansion out into the marketplace?
That's obviously a big piece of it. We've been super excited about bringing aviation to market. We've been working on it for a long time. We worked with the same creative director, Sam Jordan, who we worked with on building the Airfuel brand, on this brand and really, you know, putting the thought and work into making something that's beautiful, but really reflects the flower quality that's inside. Right. I mean, that's always one of the balances, right? Is there's package outside, there's product inside. Those two things need to match up.
Yes.
That's a major focus for us. We just launched in July our e-commerce platform, like I said, built on Adobe Magento, which was a huge undertaking. It's
massive. Most people just use their menu system.
Which is fine. Totally fine. But for us, we wanted to, again, back to that, the brand values. We said, is this the best we can do for the experience of shopping online? Most people shopping for cannabis online, like, there's a lot of great plug-and-play partners out there, but if you want to compare anything to DoorDash, Uber, Instacart, where everyone lives the rest of their life,
right?
We're like, no one is anywhere close. So like, let's do things the way we want. Let's have people shop in multiple ways. Let's use machine learning to drive product recommendations. Let's create curated lists and have featured brands and have all these things and make a really, really rich e-commerce shopping experience, just like you get in a high-end retail like Airfield, just like you get anywhere else in the world. So we're super excited about the expansion of that platform. We got a lot of interesting feature releases coming out on that. Obviously, holiday is a huge focus for us on the retail side. This is we're entering into the busy season where it just becomes really fun. So we've got a lot of really cool programming stuff we'll be doing in store with our Shop and Shop, which we built also in COVID. We launched an in-store Shop and Shop program. We call it the Hangar, where we partner with brands. It's right in the middle of the retail floor. It's part of COVID strat. Well, we're going to do it before, but it got built in COVID. But, as lines became reality, we wanted to make sure that at every point you're standing somewhere, like, you've already started the shopping experience. So we built this out. It's got a huge focus on education. We love getting like challenger brands in there and new brands to be able to show them to the market. We've got Level in there right now, with Pro Tabs, and super cool. So, we'll continue to push on all fronts. We'll push on the product side. We'll push on the e-com and digital side, obviously push in retail. And just figure out how we can do as much as we can. Small but mighty.
Awesome. Well, like I said, I love your retail location. Look forward to seeing what you do with your aviation house brand. And Chris, really appreciate your time, sir.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
We would like to thank Chris for his time and being on today's episode. Find out more about Airfield Supply Co. by visiting them online at airfieldsupplyco.com. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you here on the next episode of Conversations in Cannabis.